for us.
And you told us, okay.
Rabbi Menachem Lipek, President's Day Shir, 2009. The topic is Yirmiyahu 70 years.
Relation to Megillat
Esther,
right?
Relation to
Megillat Esther, I guess. I'll explain the full title. At Yirmiyahu 70 years, there are series we're going through the Vim Achronim case. It's only every couple of months, but trying to keep up. But last year, we were near Miel, and we used Yirmiyahu as a springboard to explain Hanukkah. And now we're going to use Yirmiyahu to explain Purim, because those are the two holidays of Bayit Sheni. The two big Drabanan holidays. And their source, I'm trying to show you, even though the Drabanan holidays, their sources are very well-founded in Tanakh. Especially Megillat Esther. And in general, no one would really think there's too much of an obvious connection between Yirmiyahu and Megillat Esther, correct? Unless you might be familiar with some kind of Midrashim. But from what you remember, is there any connection between Yirmiyahu and Megillat Esther in Drash? Nothing? I'll try to clear away some cobwebs. Early, in the third year of his reign, he makes a party. He makes a mesibah. Remember? We're going to get to Daniel today. But when he makes the party, what's the party about? Who remembers the medrash? It doesn't say in the beginning what the party's for, does it? It says, Samishteh, the Hosar of Avadal. Who's the party for? Anyone remember in Midrash? What? Yes. Mumble that loud.
The end of the 70
years. Yeah, what 70 years?
The 70 years
of
Brother's
brother. Who's heard that before? The Yirmiyahu? Everyone? You've heard that? I'm going to make sure it's familiar. One of the reasons that Chazal say that Ahasuerus made the party was because Yirmiyahu's 70 years are over. And what didn't happen? What was he afraid of? The Jews would pick up and leave. Baruch Hashem or Baruch Marduk. They didn't leave. And that's actually Baruch Marduk. that he didn't leave. And then he made a party. And what was his mistake? He miscalculated by 1 year. Okay, everyone's heard something like that? That always shows there's also a pasuk that we do, aside from a Yirmiyahu, like Bikelim Shonim, we do Nigun Echa. Why do we switch to Nigun there? Because what Kelim did they take out? The Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. We're going to, believe it or not, that's going to be Yirmiyahu also. But what I'm just getting at, Chazal do link what happened to Megillat Yirmiyahu. So we're going to start with Yirmiyahu today. And obviously the 70 years, which we've talked about before, I'm not going to repeat that, I'm just going to review it. And I want to show you how Chazal's interpretation of Megillat Esther is very much rooted in what happened. It's going to be, we're going to look at how Chazal calculates the chronology of Megillat Esther. What I want to show you in the shir is that their calculations of chronology are more for thematic reasons than for historical reasons. And we're going to end up with a big mess, which relates to a big, big problem in Jewish history, which isn't the full topic, which is to allude to that, because that requires a 3-hour shir, but I promise Rabbi Landau that would begin to deal with it. Now, let's begin with the 70 years. You said the 70 years of Galus Bava, right? And you said something, but you have to be quiet for a minute, because you were right.
Yeah. I said 70 years of
Galus. Yeah. I didn't want to hear what you said, but you said what everyone said. Yirmiyahu, everyone's heard of Yirmiyahu 70 years. We've discussed them before. And in standard, if I want to fill in the blank, Yirmiyahu talked about 70 years of fill in the blank. But what blank did you fill in? 7 years of Galus. Correct? And other people say 7 years of Chorban. Everyone's heard those before? When we studied Yirmiyahu in Perek HaFei, we realized Yirmiyahu didn't talk about 7 years of exile, nor did he talk about 7 years of destruction of the temple. He talked about 70 years of Babylonian sovereignty, which is a very fitting topic for today, being President's Day. That's why we're off of work and why there's a shir this morning. But a president, we like that's the concept of sovereignty, which You don't have a president. I mean, I guess in the shul you have a president. But in general, president, the president state, the word that America is talking about, is the fact that the head of a sovereign state who runs it, which we're marking all their accomplishments, whatever, I'm not exactly sure the reason for it. I remember why. It used to be Washington Day when I was growing up, Washington Day. And then there were too many holidays in February, so they crunched them to one. And they added Martin Luther King Day. What? Yeah, big end. It was to cut out. Otherwise, the economy, it was going to hurt the economy. Now, what we're going to begin with, looking at Yom Yom Perakate, this will be a quick review. I want to make sure you understand that what Yom Yom is talking about is 25 years of Babylonian sovereignty. And what's interesting is what we've done in Yom Yom thus far, before Yom Yom was prophesied about 7 years of Babylonian sovereignty, we're going to see that was given in the fourth year of Yehoiakim. Beforehand, Yirmiyahu told the people to repent, and had they really repented properly, everything could have been continued normally. In the fourth year of Yehoiakim, Yirmiyahu is going to give this nevuah about the upcoming rule of Babel, and his main prophetic line is going to be as follows. Here, we'll see it inside, we want to make sure it's clear before we read it. His main prophetic line is going to be, the main thing that God wants you to do, or your punishment for your bad deeds, is, I'm bringing Babel in to be sovereign over you. That gives you two options. Accept Babylonian sovereignty, means giving up your own, for the next 70 years, means for your foreseeable future. Give it up. And that's your punishment for your bad behavior. Which I'm putting you into rehab, but in-home rehab. Your behavior is bad. You need, what's it called, house rehab? House rehab. We don't have to institutionalize you. You're not that bad. But you're in you have an electronic sensor on you, there. But you can stay in your land, but you can't rule yourself because you've been ruling yourself for 400 some years and you keep on messing up. I have to take away your sovereignty so you appreciate what it means. And then when you're ready, I'll give you your sovereignty back. Like, you know, teenagers. I'm taking away your rights. You don't get the car for 2 days or something like that, or 2 minutes. So you learn your lesson, etc. Now, if they don't listen, Yirmiyahu warns them, if you don't give up your sovereignty, then what's going to happen? Babel's going to come and wipe you out, like they'll do to the rest of the Middle East. And they have a choice. And therefore, what's often misunderstood, and again, I'm just summarizing what we saw in detail before, what a lot of people don't realize, there didn't have to be destruction of the temple, there didn't have to be exile, or a second wave of exile afterwards, had they accepted Babylonian sovereignty. That's Yirmiyahu's main point. And he's saying, recognize the hand of God behind Babylonian rule. The people don't listen to him, they don't want to listen to him, because the political opinion of the leadership, and of all the leaders, especially of the rabbis, of the establishment rabbis, was, we can fight Babel, we don't want to lose our sovereignty, no country wants to lose their sovereignty. And the whole right-wing element at that time was not willing to accept Yirmiyahu's prophecy, therefore they accused him of lying, they accused him of being an Nabi Shekhar, and they kept on making up prophecies that God said, fight Babel, and you're going to win, even though Yirmiyahu was saying, don't fight Babel. And that's the background. That's pretty much what we were, in our detailed discussion of Yirmiyahu, that's what we were into. That background explains half the book. That topic we've discussed already. We're going to use that as a springboard to understand what happens next. As we know, they don't listen, and Babel comes in and takes them out. Now, just a couple other Leon questions to see where we're going to go with this. From what you remember, Esther married Ahasuerus, right? Did they have any children? Not from what you learned in Midrash. Yeah. Remember Dayavash? Who was the mother of Dayavash? Look in any art scroll history book. It was who? It was Esther. Not even art scroll, in Beryl Wine's history book. Pretty sure it has it also. You have also Esther's mother, Esther's son, was Dayavish. And who did he take over for? For his father, Ahasuerus. What did Darius allow the Jews to do? To return, of course let them return. Darius let them build the temple. Why? That's why everything happened. It's God behind all the scenes. It's to the point that most students in most schools I think it's written. It's part of the Jewish history curriculum that Esther is the mother of Darius, and that's why the Jews returned to build the temple. And like you said, Hatach was who? Was Daniel?
Yeah, there's that. No.
What I want to show you, these Midrashim are beautiful. They're right on the mark, but they're not historical, they're thematic. That's the goal of today's share. It might not be so easy. What I want to show you, and I'm trying to understand why. When you understand the theme of the prophecies, you'll appreciate much better what the rabbis are up to in the Midrash. And what's happened afterwards is people have taken these Midrashim literally instead of thematically, which have led up to a whole rewriting of Jewish history, which confuses people terribly, and that's the goal this year today. I'm not sure if I'm going to accomplish what I'm trying to do, but I'm going to try my best.
The confusion will begin.
What?
The confusion will begin.
Yeah. Yeah, just one other, for example, if you'd like to have been, when they read the Ksuba at a wedding, don't they put a date on there? What date did they use? Yeah, yeah, good thing. And then they say BCE, CE, yeah, what do they do? What year do we use on a Ksuba? We go to Briyat Olam, but we add a little clause. The Minyan Shanu Monim. Well, why did Chazal listen to that? Why did they say, here's the year, the Be'at Olam? Why did they say the Minyan Shanu Monim? Okay, I'll try to explain why. There's a good reason they have to say that, because they don't want a lot. Now, so let's open up with Yirmiyahu Perek Chafei. Just the first line is enough. Yirmiyahu Perek Chafei, which we've seen before. Everyone have the Tanakh, I hope? Yirmiyahu Perek Chafei. And we'll get right to work. What's interesting about Yirmiyahu Chafei, it has a double date. We're in a few psukim in Tanakh where an event is dated with the Jewish king and a foreign king, which is a gold mine for researchers and archaeologists and historians. Hadavar she'ayahu Yirmiyahu, kol am Yehuda v'shana revit lo Yehoyakim ben Yoshiyahu melech Yehuda, hi ha'shana rishonit l'nevchanet ha'melech Bavel. Fourth year of Yehoyakim. I want to make sure you remember Jewish history here. How many years before the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed is this? Yehoyakim was the last king. Where's Yehoyakim in Jewish history? Everyone's heard of Yehoyakim? In general, good guy, good king or bad king? He's on the bad side. Yehoyakim's not very good. Who was his father? That was Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu was a good king, did tshuva. Yoshiyahu had several children. Yoshiyahu had Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim was his grandson. And also had Tzidkiyahu and Yoachaz. It was a couple. He had three sons who became kings. Yehoyakim was the first, actually Yoachaz became king and then didn't last very long and Yehoyakim took over. How many years was Yehoyakim king for? The last two kings are easy to remember. Yehoyakim and Tzidkiyahu are both 11 years. That's the easiest way to remember. Yehoyakim, 11 years. Tzidkiyahu, 11 years. At the end of Yehoyakim, what happened? Yehoyakim, both of them, if you want to remember them. Yehoyakim and Tzidkiyahu, they're brothers. They both reigned 11 years. They both rebelled against Babel. Babel came and put down both revolts. And both ended with exile. Yehoyakim ended with the exile of his son Yehoyakim and the Charash HaMazgir, the aristocracy who goes into exile. Ben HaBadal put Tzidkiyahu in charge instead to be subservient. 4 or 5 years later, Tzidkiyahu rebels. All this is against Yirmiyahu's advice. Babel comes in, sets the siege, and the rest was history. The rest is Korban HaBayit and the second wave of exile. And then Gedaliah is left over, and that's going to be whenever next year we're in, when we can go back to Yirmiyahu. But that, I want to make sure that's fair. I'm assuming that's not a chiddush to most people, I'm hoping. Because I can't give up. The ship is assuming you serve 11 years. If that's true, how many years before the Beit HaMikdash is actually destroyed is this Nevuah being given? Do a quick calculation. The fourth year of Yehoyakim king for 11, 18 years. Isn't that simple? I want to try to keep it simple. But you have to be aware of that. This Nevuah is given 18 years before the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, and it's not saying it will be destroyed. It's saying it might be destroyed if you don't do proper tshuva, if you don't accept Babylonian sovereignty. Yirmiyahu continues. He tells him, I've been warning you for the last 20-some years to improve your ways. Again, we deal with it. And then in Pasachet, after all these warnings, Lachem, because you haven't listened, and you haven't listened to my rebuke, Pasachet, Lachem, Komar Hashem, Tzvot Yana Shir Shamat V'Dvarai, initial echo the cast come is put upon the Hashem that never had better than a father lafi they got him a lot of zot by your shvel the whole gemel is to be the bat in him called the son called him ha and the next passage and then passage grala by that call the zot the chorba the shama but do a gemel is not a father 70 shana now listen carefully passage yud gemel I'm sorry, what did you get that? By Yakim Lot Shivim Shana, Efkor HaMelech Vavel, Agoy Ahunu Mashem, Et Avonam, Ba'ala Et Kedim, Besamti Otam Nishimot Olam. After the 7 years are over, what am I going to do? I'll give Vavel back. Now, keep your finger right here, and open up the first Pasuk of Ezra. Ezra Pasuk Aleph. If anybody wants,
for Ezra, we're done. I just have a whole bunch of sources that are over from Hanukkah with big print of Ezra.
Okay, I just had next for the car anyhow. So if anybody wants, we're not going to do all these. Does anyone have eyes like mine and can't see anymore? So you can use the first couple of psukim of Ezra here. Which one is it? If you have Tanakhim, it's fine, but nice bigger print, you can follow with you. Look at the first line. Before we read it again, I want to go back and read, keep your finger by Ezra. Go back again and read Yirmiyahu, Pasuk Yud, Kafei Pasuk Yud Gimel. I'm going to Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayakim lo tshivim shana, efkor ha-melech vavel, v'alago yehunu ma-shem, et avonam v'al eret kadim, v'samti otam nishimot olam. And I'll bring the rest in detail in Yirmiyahu to go on vavel. The first line of Ezra is what? Now I lost it. V'sat echad l'koresh, Melech Parav, what's it say? Lichlot Dvar Hashem Yitir Yimiyo. That's a clear link to Yimiyo Perchatei. Therefore, Yimiyo's Nevoah, a Babylonian sovereignty for 70 years, ends with what event? With the first year of Koresh. That's going to be crystal clear. And therefore, 70 years of Yimiyo is 7 years of Babylonian sovereignty. And just as God predicted, after 70 years, it was over. Why is it that everyone says Yirmiyahu is talking about 7 years of Korban? Because the right is the wrong. So it was 7 years of Korban, but that was not a prediction of what would happen. What was it? It was a statement made in prophetic hindsight. And I'll read that for you. Prophetic hindsight. We'll see what I mean. Open up Zechariah. Again, Brigham, you need a lot of fingers for today. Open up Zechariah. Zechariah Perek Aleph. We did Zechariah Hanukkah time. In the first Perek of Zechariah, we're going to go back to Ezra in a minute. In the first Perek of Zechariah, just look at the date to make sure we have it right. Okay. Yeah. What's the date in the beginning of Zechariah? Bechorosh, it's the second year of Dariush. He's another Persian king. It's on the handout also, good, on the three-page handout. The last page of the handout of the staple handout. That's the one-page handout. I was just cleaning up my trunk yesterday. From Hanukkah. No, from Hanukkah. Okay, it's about to get better. It says, Thank you, Dayavesh. It says, Vayan amalach Hashem v'yomar Hashem tzvot ad matay atalot rachim et yushan et ari Yehuda Hashem z'am t'zeh shirin shana. There's a tefillah in the middle of the Zevuah who is asking God, how long is it going to take for you to have mercy on Yerushalayim, whose anger has been kindled against the city for the last 70 years. What's going to happen in the second year of Dayavesh? Everyone knows. They break ground on, they successfully break ground on the second temple. It will take them 4 years to build, but the actual construction of the temple that is actually completed begins on Hanukkah. That was the Hanukkah Shem last time. Begins on the second year of Dayavesh, in the ninth month in Hanukkah of that year. Remember? And therefore, what's Yirmiyahu saying? I mean, Yirmiyahu, what's Chaya saying? It's been 70 years since the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. That's two different sets of 70 years. It might be thematically related, but it's two different. One is a prediction that Bavel will be in charge for 7 years. Another is a statement that Zechariah makes that it's been 7 years since the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And what year was the Beit HaMikdash destroyed? Right? Okay, oh, forget, not I'm talking about that, but that, what year was it destroyed? In the 11th year of Hezekiah. And therefore, Zechariah's 70 years begin when? In the 11th year of Hezekiah, and they end with the second year of Dayavish. Yirmiyahu's 7 years begin with the 4th year of Yerakim and end with the 1st year of Koresh. That's the most complicated thing. It's real simple. I'll say it again. I'm going to give it to you on a chart, but the chart would confuse you if you don't explain it first. I have it all on a chart in a minute. I want to make sure this is clear. There's two sets of 70 years. And all the parshanim deal with it. I'm not machadish anything. This is all written down. But if you want to preach it with Chazal Zu, you have to understand they begin with this. This is their anchor. Yirmiyahu talks about 7 years of Babylonian sovereignty to begin with the 4th year of Yehoiakim and then with the 1st year of Koresh. Why is that? That's Yirmiyahu Perachatei. There's nothing to argue there. Those are anchored psukim. That's why I opened with Yirmiyahu Perachatei. With the 1st year of Koresh. There's another 7 years of Zechariah that begins with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and ends with the building of the Beit HaMikdash. It begins with the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu and ends with the 2nd year of Dayavish. Got that? What Chazal has to figure out is what happens
between those?
7 years.
No, between the two 70-year...
You guys figure out. What's the gap going to be between?
18.
Why 18 years?
Fourth year.
Gotcha.
From the 4th year of Yehoiakim to the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu is 18 years. The last 7 years of Yehoiakim and the 11 years of Tzidkiyahu.
That makes the...
That means how many years are there between Koresh and the 2nd of Dayavish? The same 18 years. Is that clear?
But the gap then, time gap between Dayavish and these years back, as almost by a shame.
No, I'll explain that in a minute. Listen, from what you remember, when did the Jews return? What event allows the Jews to return from Babel to Israel? It's called the famous Sinai Decree. We've all heard of Hasarat Koresh. That's the beginning. We're going to read that in a minute in the book of Ezra. In the beginning of the book of Ezra, Koresh makes a decree. Any Jew wants to return from the whole Persian Empire, Yivorach. Come and let him come build the house. We'll read it again in a second. He's the first Persian king who defeats Babel. How many other Persian kings have you heard of? Just throw out the names that you've heard of. Koresh is the first one. You've heard of any others? Just Persian king, Malchei Parath. What? Ahasuerus is the famous one. How do we know he's the king of Parath? It says so, doesn't it? He's Melech Parath and Mizahidim, but he's the king. Hamolech, we hold that close. But he's definitely a Persian.
That's
a great name. Where? I'm sorry, there's another one named Darius, isn't there? Dayavesh? Darius? What? There's Davish, but Persian king. So Davish Hamadi was earlier. He's a Mede. And he has a son Ahasuerus. He has a father, Ahasuerus Hamadi. But those are Median kings. We mentioned Daniel, I don't want to confuse it with him. But the Persian kings that we've heard of Koresh, we've heard of Ahasuerus, we've heard of Dayavesh, and there's another king named Artaxerxes, who's very popular in the book of Ezra. So we have four different Persian kings we heard of for sure. There might have been more. Now what's neat is nowhere in Tanakh do we get their organized succession. We just know one thing for sure, that Koresh is the first. Understand? Koresh is definitely the first. Chazal are going to try and piece together the history. And the key work that they do it in is a book called Seder Olam. What I want to do in the share today is try to explain to you how they piece together the history of the Persian time period. It's a lot of fun and very interesting. That's what we have to figure out. What makes it so confusing is the book that we're about to read, the book of Ezra, and we call it Ezra Nehemiah. What's confusing about the book is, the book goes out of its way to confuse you. In what sense? It doesn't give you any continuous chronology. No, I'm not saying it's not out of order. It's not out of order. But it skips. And it doesn't give you any reference point that I can say, to connect things together. For example, when you read Sefer Melachim, is it easy to build a continuous chronology? The author of the book, Yirmiyahu Navi, goes out of his way to give you the ability to put together a continuous chronology. No doubt about it. That's obvious. When you read the book of Ezra, you cannot do that because it begins in the 1st year of Koresh, and it just says that's when Yirmiyahu's 7 years were over, and it talks about events in the time of Koresh. The next big event is going to be something, we'll read in a minute, something happened in the time of Dayavish. We're going to read that very soon. There'll be another event in the time of Artaxerxes. It doesn't tell you Who were kings in between? It doesn't tell you how many years Koresh was king for. How many years happened in between? It gives you, you understand what I mean? It just selectively quotes different events. And it will never give you anything continuous. I want to explain afterwards that that's intentional. I'll try to explain why. But it's that ambiguity that makes it such a free-for-all in the world of Midrash. So let's read now in the book of Ezra, just opening lines, the ones that have big print. The book, yeah.
I thought Jairus, then Darius, then Koresh. You're saying Koresh
is
first?
No, Koresh for sure is first. According to everybody. Koresh is the first Persian king. According to everybody. No, no one can argue that. The question is going to be, where does Ahasuerus fit in? Is he before Dayavish or after Dayavish? But we have it. We hear about Ahasuerus, but Megillat Esther doesn't tell us where to fit him in. He says he's Molech Mehoduat Kush. Probably the book assumes you know who he is and where he fits in. But the one that we have, the book doesn't tell you who was his daddy, who was his kid, and where he fits in. He just says he was a big, great king. It doesn't say how long he reigned for. We know, we have up to the 12th or 13th year of his reign in the book. Now let's go back to the book of Ezra and the big sheet. Yeah, question.
Sir, question.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
70 years, or just the number 70, if it was any other number, it was pretty, would be pretty obvious, but it's an exact number that's intended. But the number 70, especially in some sort of a homiletical, passage, is it possible that 70 doesn't refer to exact number 70, but sort of...
Now, I'll prove to you that's true later on. It could be and now, 70 can be anywhere between 70, between 66 and 74. Correct? In significant digits?
65
or 65 and 75, something like that. That's for sure. I'll prove to you in Karya that 70, Karya talks about 7 years since the Churban. In year 2 of Dayavish, he says the same thing in year 4 of Dayavish. You understand? Year 4 of Dayavish says it's been 7 years since we've been fasting about Yerushalayim. So 7 years doesn't have to be exact to the date.
What I'm saying is, seventy.
Could 70 reflect, let's say, the nation, right? Could 70 reflect something international about? Could 70 reflect the concept of a connection between Am Yisrael and other nations? Which, wait, by the way, is that true or not? Is 70 a code number for?
Sure.
Yeah. But Shivim Amim, Purim. I mean Purim. Sukkot. Shivim Purim. It's always, they're always illusions. Shivim Nefesh. The Shivim Amim, you kind of up, you find them, but then say, but it's, in Parshat Noach, in Perek Yud, in Tulav B'nei Cham, Shem B'yafet, you have 70 nations.
Are you saying, can 70 just mean many?
No, I think it's more than just many. Because, for example, we're on our way to Har Sinai to learn how to become a nation to represent God, and on the way, in the seminar, we bump into this place called Elim. And what by chance do we find there?
70 palm trees.
70 palm trees, and how many springs?
12.
What's 12 always represent? No, no, no. What are wells, what's the connection between wells and growing palm trees? The water from the well gives the palm trees and enables them to grow. Now, if there was a theme in Chumash about Am Yisrael being chosen to be elect to other nations, it would be a really nice seminar. I'll give you just an example, a little aside. Remember camp or anyone ever working camp? Where you send your kids to camp? So for opening day, Pula, it always takes a lot of planning. In a good educational camp, you have a theme for every session. Hopefully it's an educational theme or a Jewish theme. But the first thing you want to do with your kids is wow them the first day. You're not giving them long hour, 2 hour lessons in the first day. They'll lose them. They won't come back next year. But the first day, you want to be wow, but you want to have it related to your overall theme. The next thing you start giving, detailed lessons. Opening day Pula is Mamad Har Sinai. That's the big well. You follow? It's the theatrics, the thunder, the lightning thing, and they're scared. You can't do that every day, and they don't want that every day. But it definitely gets their attention, and gets the point across. What's the first seminar where you get a detailed lesson? That's Parsha Mishpatim. That's this week's Parsha. That's the next day. You understand? That's going to be, and then there'll be another seminar. The first session is 40 days. And they don't graduate. And then let's go back to, it doesn't work so good. Remember, Moshe's job is not to take Am Yisrael out of Egypt. You know the line. He has one job to take Am Yisrael out of Egypt. His other job is to take Egypt out of Am Yisrael. And at the burning bush, when he doesn't want his job, he's not running away from responsibility. God says, you want to be savior, fine, no, Paro's one thing. God tells Moshe, you need to be an educator. You have to not tell them on the Hashem, you have to teach them on the Hashem. You have to transform them. And Moshe says, I'm not their teacher. They're not going to listen to me. They're not going to buy, I'm an outsider. I'm not one of them. And he was right in the end. He tries his hardest and God helps him, but it can take another generation. He's never able to turn that generation into a generation that's going to make it to land of Israel and follow God properly. Details is on Chumash. But that's the overall theme of Chumash of what's happening. But don't read Moses' reluctance to take the job like in the movies. Oh, I'm torn between my family and my responsibility to my nation. He doesn't think the most important point of a leader is humility that I'm not ready for the job. I'm not ready. I'm not capable. I'm not. What's the word? Not capable. I'm not suitable. But not. That's a better word. Not fit for the job. I can't. It's above it. It's too hard for me. I'm not qualified. That's the word for the job. Now let's go back to Ezra. Yes, Ezra Perak Aleph Pasuk Aleph. B'shnat Achad Koresh Melech Paras, the Chodesh Hashem Yitzir Yimiyom. Kayir Hashem Ruach Koresh Melech Paras. We've done these psukim so many times before. These are the favorite ones because he tells them it's like history repeats itself. Anyone who wants to make aliyah, everyone says it, sends money. You know that, don't you? You've all seen these before? Or do I have to read them? See, Pasuk Gimel. Mi b'chem b'cholam o'yi el ovimo, v'al Yerushalayim shub Yehuda, v'ivet et beit Hashem alay Yisrael v'alim shub Yerushalayim, to the house. And Pasuk Dalet. B'chol anishar, in komata shu gar sham, yinaseh anshem u'kamo b'ketzev v'vzav v'rukush. Anyone who reads, send money. Now, what's important for the Megillah, is what's coming up in Pasuk Zayin. What happens in Pasuk Zayin? It might not be on the big sheet, yeah, because it's a different topic. In Ezra, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Zayin, they're on their way to Babel, they're on the way from Haras to Jerusalem to build the temple. And what does Koresh do for them to help them out? Which kelim? Let's read them. And again, when Chazal says something, they make the strange assumption that their audience knows Torah. and they're making another assumption that they're not coming to read for them Sukkim. They're assuming they know Torah, and they're making a statement, usually a sarcastic one or a satirical one, to make a thematic point. And when people don't know Torah and they take it literally, don't take it literally, take it seriously. And that's what causes so many mistakes. Listen carefully now. Perek Aleph Pasuk Zayin. What does it do? I mean, Bamelech Koresh, the same kelim that Nebuchadnezzar took out of Yerushalayim and put those kelim in Nebuchadnezzar's house of God, Marduk, and Yotzien Koresh took them out of Nebuchadnezzar's palace, and what do you do with them? I gave Yitzhak the Gizbar, but he counted them up and gave them to the prince of Yehuda to bring him back to Yerushalayim to build. Which means, already in the time of Koresh, these kelim and kelim shonim, they're out of there.
So why were they strange?
What? They weren't. For sure they weren't. And he can afford his own achashverosh. Believe me, he's rich enough. He doesn't need the kelim. Chazal need that pasuk to give a thematic message. Because what's bothering Chazal is why are we about to be destroyed? And why is Am Yisrael almost destroyed in the time of achashverosh? How does God allow such a thing to happen? I want to get to that. It's going to be the main thing behind the Megillah. So, Beth and Ezra, they return, and guess what happens when they return in Perek Gimel in the book of Ezra? They break ground. They build a Mizbeach. They start bringing sacrifices in Rosh Hashanah that year. They have a, they purchase the lot next door, and they start getting ready to build a Beit HaMikdash. Hey, I'm going to get myself in trouble today. I did already. They start to build. They get ready to build and everything in the end of Perek Gimel. And people are complaining. That some people are all excited about it in the end of Perek Gimel. And the old-timers say, oh, this is nothing like this. It's nothing like the old Beit HaMikdash. It doesn't compare. But whatever happens in Perek Dalet, they try to start in the second year of Koresh when they return. And it's a dud. There's an injunction, we'll see in a minute. The neighbors, the neighbors who aren't Jewish, this is like 20 years ago when there used to be non-Jewish people living here. So look what happens in Perek Dalet. Vayishvu tzar Yehuda bin Yamin, ki b'nei ha-gola b'nim eichal ha-shem el ha-Yisrael, the enemy of Yehuda bin Yamin, means the local population, when we return to Israel, we aren't the majority, we're a minority. There's lots of people living here already since the Assyrians had brought in. And they've taken on some of our customs, and they were living in Yerushalayim. And the Jews are returning and building this house for God. What do they want to do? Hey, we want to join in. We've been worshiping your God. We know your God. You know, we know what kosher is. We know that stuff. We want to join you. We want to be one. Let's work together on this. So they tell him, we want to join with you. They come to Zubel and says, let's go with you together. And Pastor Gimel, ואמר להם זובבל, וישוע, ושאר ראשי ישראל, לא לכם לנו לבנות בית לאלוהינו, כי אנחנו יחד נבנה להשם אלוהי ישראל, כאשר ציוון המלך חורש בן החורש. The wording of the passage is a little difficult, but Zerubbabel and the leaders of Israel say, this is a Jewish Indian, this is a Jewish project. This is not an international, this is not a group project. This is just for the Jews to build, you guys are out of this. And they say, no, we want to build with you, and they get to a big fight. So guess what they say? If we can't build with you, then you can't build either, and they get an injunction. Listen how they get the injunction, Pasuk Dalet. Vayi am ha'aretz, that's the local population. Merapim yidam Yehuda. What's merapim mean? They weaken, like nevim atem nevim. They weaken, the people return, and what do they do? Umavilim otam livnot, they scare them. Yeah, we're going to throw rocks at you, and we're going to... No, they scare them from building, and also... They hire advisors, lobbyists, to go to the authorities, the personal authorities, and lafira satam, to stop their plans. From when to when? Listen carefully. Then the pasuk dalet. Then the pasuk hey. Koyimei koresh melech paras. Vad machuta yevesh melech paras. How long does the injunction work for? From koresh till Daryavish. But notice. In this book, we have no idea how long that is. Correct? It doesn't say for 20 years, for 50 years, for 2 years. It says, from the time of Koresh until Daryavesh, they stopped the building. There's an injunction. Which is true. When do we start building again? What year? In the second year of Daryavesh, we start building. We know that from Haggai and Zechariah. How long passes? We have no idea in the book of Ezra. Can we calculate it? Can we or can't we calculate it? In this book, no. From other sources, how can we calculate it? What? Using the two sets of 70 years, we have a perfect calculation, don't we? Yeah. How do we calculate it? How many years was it from Koresh to Daryavesh? The same amount of time it was from the 4th year of Yehoiakim to the 11th year of Tzidkiel. Did I lose anybody here or not? No. Is it simple? I know from outside sources, from Sefer Melachim, from Yirmiyahu and Zechariah, I can calculate that there's 18 years from the second year of Koresh to the first and second year of Koresh to the second year of Daryavesh. What happened during those 18 years? We have no idea. We have no idea how many years Koresh was king for. We have no idea who's the king in between. Even though there seems to be king in between. The Koresh ad Daryavesh. Otherwise it would be Koresh u Daryavesh.
How do you get the second year of Koresh
and
second year of Daryavesh in 18 years?
I'll fix it to the first year of Koresh.
Can you say that last distinction again? Otherwise...
Yeah, okay. I'll start again. So the first year of... In Ezra, it simply says they stopped the building from the first year of Koresh, or when they returned, it might be the second, I want to get to, don't worry about the 1 year. From the early years of Koresh until the second year of Daryavesh, they stopped, there's an injunction against building. The details of that injunction are the next parakim, which are all in Aramaic. If you know your book of Ezra, it's in Aramaic. The exchange of letters where they say they're going to rebel against you, don't trust those Jews, and writing back, no, we're loyal, the whole thing. That exchange takes place in the next set of parakim. The book of Ezra just tells you there's an injunction then, and there's building stuff. We have no idea how long transpired. Using outside sources in Tanakh, I can calculate how much time. Because I know from the first year of Koresh, I know the first year of Koresh is 7 years after the 4th year of Yehoiakim. And I know the second year of Daryavesh, when we're building, is 70 years since the 11th year of Tzidkiel.
Okay.
If I want to calculate how many years from Koresh to be, I should give you the page already. I have a page, but again, the page is still confusing. Yeah, the page is only confusing. The page is a review.
From the 4th year of Yehoiakim.
Yeah. From the 4th year of Yehoiakim. But I'll go back again. Everyone, there's an 11-year, there's an 18-year gap between the fourth year of Yehoyakim and Korban HaBayit and the 11th year of Hizkiyahu. That's simple. No. The two sets of 70 years overlap by that 18-year gap. Yirmiyahu's 70 years begin in the fourth year of Yehoyakim and end in the first year of Koresh. Zechariah's 70 years begin in the 11th year of Hizkiyahu and in the second year of Dayavash. And therefore, if the gap in the beginning of those 70 years is 18 years, the gap, the overlap, at the end is 18 years. And therefore, there's 18 years between Dayavash, between Koresh and Dayavash.
Until the second year of
Dayavash. What? Until the second year of Dayavash. Got that? Mm-hmm. We have 18 years. What happened? Now we have no idea. We just know how long it's been. What would we like to think happened in between? What would be really neat if it happened in between? Right? That would be a really good time for Purim to happen. Right? Wouldn't it be a good time for Purim to happen? Because we know there's a king. Who is probably that king in between? Ahasuerus. That would be a nice, you know, assumption. Can it fit? Can I squeeze it in? Yeah. What, to figure that, we need to know how many years Ahasuerus was king for, and how many years Koresh was king for. Does Tanakh tell us? No. But we can calculate.
How do you know you're one of the Yerovishas 70 years into Kruim?
How do we know the what?
You're one of the Yerovishas 70 years into Kruim.
You're two of the Yerovishas. That's Zechariah, Perek, Aleph, Pasuk, Yud-Bet. Now, what's the minimum amount of years that Ahasuerus is king for? Megillah, everyone knows by heart. That's easy. Wait, in the crowd, what year is the party? It's not Shalosh, Shlomo, Chol, Sam, remember? What year is Esther married? Shnat Sheva L'mochol. Remember? And then you make Mishnei Esther. You make Mishnei Esther. What year is he peeled in Perek Gimel? Start? Remember? How does Perek Gimel start? Achar Dvar Me'elam, isn't it? Gadal Haman, Gadal HaMelech et Haman, etc. And then the Haman starts, right? And then you start getting annoyed. If it's fasting, you start getting annoyed. The we start the month story and Pasuk Zayin Rechet he tipil poel goral the 13th of Nisan, right? Everyone's making Pesach and he's playing he's gambling, right? And what day comes out? 13th of Adar, but it's all happening in the 12th year of Achashverosh. It says over and over again the 12th year of Achashverosh. The miracle happened. This is in Adar in the 12th year of Achashverosh. After that, the next year, remember, Esther Mordechai sent letters to Divrei Shalom Ve'emet to keep pouring the next year. So there's at least 13 years of Achashverosh in the Megillah. There's at least 13. Can that fit? So far, we have room for 16 years, right? Because 18 years from Koresh to taking of Dayavish. So Koresh is at least a year or two, and Dayavish had 2 years. So I have the 13 or 14 years of Achashverosh can fit in, but how much room does that leave me for Koresh? Koresh can't be more than 3 years. If I find a pasuk about Koresh, the fifth year of Koresh, I'm stuck. There's one other pasuk itzach about an event in the time of Koresh in a different book. That's in Daniel. Look in Daniel Perek Yud, first line. Daniel Perek Yud. Remember, Daniel was living in the end of what time period? In the end of the 70 years, Daniel was living. That's what Perek Yud's about. Daniel begins, remember Belshazzar? Remember, there's Nebuchadnezzar, Evil Merodach, and Belshazzar. Those are the three Babylonian kings. And then they fall to Madai, then, for year to Madai, and then Parash takes over. Perek Yud and Daniel, what year is it?
Of
course. That's the last mention, and the only mention of Koresh's reign outside Ezra. Does that tell us how long Koresh was king for? No. But it's at least 3 years. No. If I make an assumption that Koresh was king for only 3 years, and Ahasuerus for only 13 or 14, bingo. Understand? That's exactly what Seder Olam does. No. Is that Mesorah or Parshanut? That's Parshanut, classic. Is it legitimate? It's wonderful, isn't it? That, what we just did, that's why I did all that work. Okay. What Seder Olam does, and that's what Chazal do pretty much, is they decide, let's crunch, right, all those events into these 18 years. Now, what do I gain by that? I need to understand why is it, even though Kor said you can't build and all these hate letters are going on, why the change of policy of the Persian Empire that all of a sudden, the second year of Dayevesh, we can build our temple again? What happened? What's the reason for it? Now I got a great reason. What happened? Mark Esther's running the show. Yeah?
Just one problem.
Yeah?
Dayevesh is two?
Five or six. Which is even better. What? Mrs. Mommy's running the show. That's got to be, you understand? According to Chazal, Dayevesh is more than 5 or 6 years old. So who's really running the show? Mordechai and Esther. Yeah? Yeah? Like Sarayu Da Binyamin, for sure. In fact, go back. I purposely skipped the pasuk now. Now go back to Ezra, Tarek Dalet. Okay, go back to pasuk Hey. There was Sochem Yotim Lafir Tatam, Koy Me Koresh Melech Paras, Adi Me Adayavish Melech Paras. That was pasuk Hey. Look at pasuk Vav. Look at pasuk Vav. Everyone got it? Tarek Dalet, pasuk Vav, the next pasuk. What did it say there? Umachut Achashverosh. When Machut of Achashverosh? In the beginning of his reign, what happened? Kasut Sikna, or Yisrael Dan Yerushalayim. In the beginning of the reign of Achashverosh, they wrote a hate letter against an injunction against the Jews building the house for God. What did Chazal say? Koresh gave them the right to build. Who stopped them building? Koresh died, had a heart attack or something like that early. Achashverosh takes over. What's the first thing he does? Stops the building. That's why it's so mean.
He stops the building because of the people that are living in Israel, or not?
Because of
the injunctions, the letters, live from Medina, and he stops the building. It doesn't say that, does it? No. But it's a great interpretation, isn't it? So, you understand why everyone explains the psukim this way? It's such a perfect fit. Yeah. Where? Outside?
Yeah.
A Mordechai is mentioned. His name is Mordechai Bilshan. In Ezra Teret Beth, look in Ezra Teret Beth, but they get a list of all the people making Aliyah.
Yes.
Who they come? Yeah, look, he's like top of the list, isn't he? In Teret Beth, Pasuk Beth. The people return with Melech Bavel, like with Koresh. Elu b'nei b'dina olim yishvi ha-gola, asho glam nefakadet Melech Bavel, v'yashu b'nei ushan v'yuda, ish li'iro, asher bau imtu Bavel, Yeshu Nechem Yisrael Raya Mordechai Bosham Nisbar Gvai Holes. Is that our Mordechai?
Maybe
yes, maybe no.
How do you have Mordechai of the killer taking Aliyah?
So guess what Chazal say? He went and came back.
Far like Marvin.
Yeah.
And it makes not much sense.
He went back to get
what?
To...
Maybe went back up the mountain. He heard, he needed, what do you got? Maybe it was a doctor and was trying, no.
Thank you.
Came back on weekend. Yeah. No. But you understand when they say Mordechai there, it all fits together so nicely. Now, again, that's Parshanut, which is totally legitimate. But there's a difference between saying Parshanut and saying that's what happened. Now, if I only have Tanakh, it's so enticing to say that. Now, there's one other pasuk that forces Chazal into this box. Meaning, according to Chazal, who are the kings? Who are the Persian kings so far? Koresh is the first, and he reigned how long? 3 years.
3 years.
Who's the next king? Achashverosh, who reigned 13 or 14 years. And who takes over? Dayevesh, the son of Esther now. And as soon as he becomes king, the Jews can build and make a mikdash.
There is an Artashasta after in the next pasuk in Ezra.
Yeah, there's Artashasta, and who's Artashasta isn't clear. We don't know who that is. But that's another king.
There's
Artashasta who's writing the letters to back and forth. It might be another name for the same king. It might be a different king.
Or it might be a regnal designation.
Yeah, it might be like Paro. Like it might be a general name. Then, in the second year they build the Beit HaMikdash, how long did it take them to build that Beit HaMikdash? Anyone remember?
Okay.
It takes 4 years. Look in Ezra, Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud-Gimel, or Pasuk Yud-Dalet. And here's a very confusing pasuk, and rough because it's in Aramaic. Basically, in Perek Dalet Hay and Vav, we have the exchange of letters that stop the building, and then finally get the building started again. Go to Get Rachum, and we finally stop the injunction and we continue construction and the part, we can things get moving. In Perek Vav and Ezra, in Pasuk Yud Gimel Yud Dalet's enough. B'Shavei have it. Perek Vav Pasuk Yud Dalet. B'Shavei Yudei Banim Matzichim. Those who returned, the Bnei Golah who returned, were successful and they began to build. B'Nevuat Haggai Navi, you know, with the Nevuah and the prophecies and the help and the guidance of the Navi Haggai and Zechariah. That's the Hanukkah Nevuot. Haggai Zechariah Neviah by Ido. Uvino v'shachlilu mintam Ela Israel. They were able to build and fix up with the help of God of Israel and with the help of and mitam Koresh v'dayavesh v'tafshasta Melech Paras. Also with the help of who? With God's help and with God's help and the help of the king who allowed them to build. Koresh gave them the first right. Dayavesh allowed them to build and also Artafshasta, who's been sending the letters, not the kings of Paras. When did they finish? On the 3rd of Adar and the 6th year of Dayavish. How long did construction take? 4 years, you're not doing so bad. You follow? From the time they began till it finished, it takes them 4 years. And what are they going to do when they finish building? What would you do? Celebrate. And that's the next line. And it's right before Pesach. Pesach's a big holiday. And that's the 6th year of Dayavish. Now, here's the coolest thing. Terek Zayin. What happens next? Achar Zvan Me'ele. Terek Zayin.
Beginning.
Read the last line of Terek Zvav. Here you find it. V'yasu chagam atzot shivat yamim, v'simcha ki simcha ma'ashem v'yitib b'med melech ashur alayhem, v'achatek yidem b'melechet v'yit alayhim elo yisro. They make a party, right? They're happy. The base of Mikdash is finished, you can celebrate.
Why are they calling it Ashur?
What?
Why are they calling it whatever it is?
Because often, many times, Ashur is the name of the area. You have that in Yishayahu as well. But Ashur and Babel, Ashur and Babel, Ashur is the area. Ashur and Babel were interchanged
a lot. It sounds like Artashasta might have been a minister or something that, you know, like a foreign minister or interior minister that basically
facilitated the thing. Yeah, Artashasta is the person mentioned they send letters back and forth to when you get Rachum.
Because
they're yeah. Yeah. We'll see. Most likely it can be these. We'll go back to that. So keep that in mind. But it's not Artashasta. Remember, this is with two, a Shin and a Sin. Our next Artashasta is going to be different with the Samach and a Shin and a Samach. Okay. Look at Terek Zayin. Okay. Achar Zvan Me'ele, Bamachut Artashasta, Melech Paras, Ezra Ben Tzlai, we get his whole Yichut. Who makes Aliyah after these things? Ezra. What year did he make Aliyah? Pasuk Vav, I'm sorry. Who Ezra Alami Babel? Who Sofer Meher B'Shot Moshe Shon Atan Alei Yisrael? Baitel Mech Elohav Alav Kol Bakashato? Pasuk Zayin. Yaduv Bnei Yisrael Min HaKonim Alavim HaMshorim HaShorim HaNetinim HaYushalayim when? B'Shat Sheva Tachshav Tamele. What's the next event in Tanakh? From the 6th year of Dayavish, I jump to what? To the 7th year of Tachshavta. Keep that in mind, it's really important. How much time elapses? Does it say? What does it tell me? Achar Hadvarim Eile. How long could that be? Fill in the blank. That's intentional in this book. Don't you understand? The author of Ezra Nehemiah doesn't let you know the continuous chronology. It's later, it's afterwards. How much afterwards? 1 year, 50 years, 100 years? We have no idea. It says Achar Hadvarim Eile. 7th year of Artashasta, Ezra makes Aliyah. Now, if you know when Ezra comes, what does he find? Intermarriage, total mess, he comes to everyone from and they come, listen, Rabbi, you want to teach his Torah. Who's a Jew is a bigger problem. And he has committees and they get rid of the Nashim Nachriot. Now, if you remember back in Perak Dalet, when we were started building, and they wanted to build with us, what did Zerubbabel tell them? We want nothing to do with you guys. When Zerubbabel comes in, and they return, it doesn't seem like intermarriage is the problem. They're going, they're it's first generation Aliyah. Or, two or three generations later, that's when you find classic examples of assimilation and intermarriage. When Ezra comes, he finds tons of intermarriage. Guess who we don't find when Ezra returns? So you don't hear a word about Haggai, not a word about Zechariah, not a word about Zerubbabel, not a word about Yeshua Kan Gadol. We find the grandchildren. Eliashiv, who's a descendant, is a Kohen Gadol now. And he's messed up with all this intermarriage. You know, We find a whole new cast. When Ezra comes, it's a new ballgame.
What pasuk are we in?
I just read the beginning of Tarek Zion. I'm just summarizing from Zion to Yud in Ezra, when he comes, he makes a committee to get rid of the Hashem Nochril. We don't hear a word. Ezra and Nehemiah never meet Chagai and Zechariah. There's no mention of that. There's tons of stories about Chagai and Zechariah, tons of stories about Ezra and Nehemiah. Ezra and Nehemiah work together, they meet each other, but there's never an instance or a story where Ezra and Nehemiah are dealing with Chagai, Zechariah, Yeshua, and Zerubbabel. What does that indicate? That they're much later. And who are they dealing with? With people who are their children and grandchildren. On top of that, who's the king now? Who's the Persian king now? Atashasta, who probably isn't Dariavish. Why not? Why should they be? The assumption is they're different kings. And therefore, it's simple shot. Ezra comes a generation or two later. In fact, if you take a look, just for the fun of it. Yes. Take a look. I'll get out the page now. You see why I didn't get this out in the beginning. That's these around. There's one without the staple. That's the one. I'll give this one out afterwards.
Does that raise the beginning of Zion in the whole thing of Ezra?
Back to Pinchas, yeah.
Because it's establishing a new clean...
Clean slate, yeah. And anyone have Tzach Simanim? You guys have Tzach Simanim? The new kind, the new Tzach, yeah, this one. Look at Tzach Simanim. No, this one. Not the Koran, this one. I think that's the cheaper one there. Lift that up for a minute. Lift that one up. No, this one. Yeah, this Tzach Simanim. And this one, what they do, they help you with the Tamim and the Shvanach and Shvanah and the Kamat Katan. It's good. They also help you out, in case you mix up with the history, they'll tell you what date it was. Huh. And if I was Seder Olam, and look what date they give you for Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph. What's the Jewish date? In Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph in Ezra. 341, what was it? 3413. Now, go back to Perek Vav Pasuk Gimel, Pasuk Gedalet, and Pasuk Tevav, which is the sixth year of Dayanish. What's it say? 3412. What did Seder Olam do? It crunched again, didn't it? It crunched it. And what did they say? When did Ezra come? The next year. How did they reach such a crazy conclusion? It makes no sense. Do you understand? What? Oh, it's like the circumstantial evidence again. It just so happened they finished building in year six of Dayavesh. And when's the next event? The seventh year of Pesach Shasta. What did they say? There is no gap. There is no gap. And who's Dayavesh? Dayavesh is Pesach Shasta. Yeah. Now we're going to learn the Kol Hatzvi. Yeah. That's a piece of cake. That's easier than toast. You don't even need toast for that. Just say, who's Dayavesh or Pesach Shasta? Matanya Tikiel, Yoyakim is Eliakim. What? Oh, you know what you do? Go back. Go back to Pesach Yedalad and Perek Vav.
Yeah.
Who let them build the Beit HaMikdash? Chagai Tchari helped them, and God, and who else? Koresh, Tayavesh, and Atashasta. Yeah. So what are they saying? It's not, they're all, it's all the same guy, and the same king can call them different names. They're all bushes. The first, second, they're all, it's all the same name. That's exactly the pasuk that brings it to proof. There's nothing wrong with that, is there? It's beautiful drash. Now, listen. The key to everything is one pasuk in Daniel. There's one pasuk in Daniel, I say, that cost us 160 years. I know we're jumping over the place, but there's no other way to do it. There's no other way to do it. What I'm trying to explain to you is when Chazal do this, they're assuming the reader has it all in his head. And they did back then. They do looking. Now, look in the book of Daniel. It's source number one on the source sheet. It's all from Seder Olam. What I'm trying to do, I'm trying to explain to you. If you read Seder Olam linearly, you wouldn't appreciate what's going on. When I said just read Seder Olam did everything we didn't share. step by step. You wouldn't appreciate it if you didn't do the footwork first beforehand. Now, in the book of Daniel, in Perek Yud Aleph, a very confusing pasuk is the result. Perek Yud Aleph in the beginning of Daniel, which is source one in Perek Havchet in Sefer Olam, but again, look at the real source. In Daniel, Perek Yud Aleph. What does it say there? From the beginning. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. What does it say? Perek Yud Aleph? Okay. If you want a bigger print, it's on the source sheet. It's source number one. Vani bishnat echad adaryavesh hamadi. That's not Daryavesh Aparti, you understand? This isn't me. It's not our Daryavesh. This is an earlier Daryavesh. The Daryavesh before Koresh, who reigned for about a year.
Yeah, he's the one who...
Daryavesh... Ben Achashverosh, it says. Vani bishnat echad adaryavesh hamadi, omdi l'machzik l'mozlo. Vata emet agila. Was Daniel Navi? Or is he in Ksuvim? Is Daniel Nabi Muktuvim? Does God ever speak to Daniel? Does God ever speak to anyone in Ksuvim? That's exactly why they're Ksuvim. Did you know that? Why is Miguel wrote in Ksuvim, even though it's written by Shmuel? It's not by Dabar Shem. God doesn't speak to him there. Okay. All the books, God, in Ksuvim, God never speaks to anyone. In Dibar, I mean, it's a bit different. But, what? But where does God speak to anybody? Others, if one consider Eov, yeah, Eov.
No, there's a bunch is written about
it. Where they belong, okay. But there's I can understand why I could put Michael Ruth with Nadim, because written by Shmuel. But bottom line, in the book of Ruth, God doesn't talk to anybody. God doesn't talk to another either. He doesn't talk to Shmuel. He says, Vayivar Shem Shmuel, Lech, Lagita, Lech Boaz, get yourself married. You know, he didn't say that. Daniel is very much like Yosef, isn't he? Does God, to the Avot, God speaks directly, or through dreams, through, like, prophetic dreams. How does God speak to Yosef? In a much more distant way, in dreams. It's not as clear. Very similar to the way he speaks to Daniel. Don't you know, didn't you pick up the connection between the story of Yosef and Gilat Esther? Someone ever noticed that? It's all over the place. Why is that? That just happened that way. That's intentional, because the author of Megillah is telling you, connect this to what's happening with Yosef and his brother. And how God talks to us in dream. Remember, Chazal states in one little line with Yerodea. How does Chazal connect to Yerodea? A dream is what? Echad Mishishim of Nevoah? You've heard that before, haven't you? Why did they pick Echad Mishishim? That's the borderline of Bito, isn't it? And Chalom B'Divan B'Telim. There's something, God talks to us through dreams, it's not in the Bula. Don't take your dreams that seriously, but don't totally ignore them. There might be something hiding in the dream, God talks to us. We all have a shtickle in the Bula in us. So, but how do you figure out what God's telling you and what's very detailing? You know, do some cheshbon ha-nefesh. But a dream is a medium through which God continues to talk to us. Don't think every dream is exactly, you know, 100% in the Bula. But don't say it's nothing. No. But listen what he said here. Daniel makes this statement. What happened? Abatam met agilach, hinei od shlusha melachim omdim b'parah. It's the first year of Daryavish Tamid, who's going to be taken over by Koresh very soon. He says, there's going to be three more kings coming to Parah. Varvi'i, who's the fourth? If there's only three kings to Parah, who's the fourth? The fourth from what he has now, right? Right now there's Daryavish Tamid. Three more kings. A parah, total four. And this fourth one, Yashir Osher Gadol. He's going to get really, really wealthy. Mikol, from all the others, Ukechet Keto, Bo'oshro, Yair HaKot Melech Gavan. In the middle of his greatness, what's going to happen? The king of Greece is going to come and take over. What's going to happen next? To this big Melech Gavan guy, what's going to happen to him? What's it say next? Let's read inside. There is the Aleph. What's going to happen in Pasek Gimel? I'm sorry. Vamad Melech Yibor, I'm sorry. Gimel. Vamad Melech Yibor, Masham Im Shal Rav, Vasek Yitzino. This Melech Yibor is going to be a big, great king with great successes. Bim Shal Rav. Govern over a lot of places and do whatever he wants. Ukhom Do, in the middle of his greatness, what's going to happen to this Melech Yibor? Tishadar Machuto, his kingdom will break apart. Tetechat, Larba, Ruchot HaShemayim. Will fall apart to all four corners. Be scattered around and this big empire is going to crumble. The Achzak Melech Negev Mitzarav, from all the Tzarim, the king to the south, is going to be the strongest, and then he'll take over, etc. And then he goes on and on and on. Now, let's say your first year at Hogwarts, and your divinity professor gave you this pasuk to interpret, right? Can you solve it? It's a Shana Aleph. We've called this a slam dunk, isn't it? What? You know what I'm talking about?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Most of you know what I'm talking about? No? Your kids know? Okay. I think they call this a slam dunk. They still use that line or not?
Yes.
The slam dunk is like, you know, you can't miss it? Now, who is it talking about? Of course it's Alexander the Great. And who's Melech Negev? Is Talmai? Talmai? Well, it's got to be. No. If indeed this is Alexander, does it say Alexander the Great?
No.
It could. It seems like it. If this is Alexander the Great, then how many Persian kings can there be? There's only three. There's room for three. Because we had about three more. How many candidates do I have for these three kings? Koresh for sure. Ahasuerus is a candidate. Dariab is a candidate, and Ataxasta is a candidate. And maybe Ataxasta, the other Ataxasta. How many positions can I fill?
Three.
Who has to be the first? That's a slam, that's a posse. Who has to be the last? There's something else everybody knows. Everyone is Alexander the Great, but everyone knows what king Alexander the Great killed.
Somebody named
Dariab. The historians say Darius the Third. But the king, the Persian king, that Alexander the Great defeated was Darius. Everyone knows that. Therefore, Darius is the last one. Can Darius be Ahasuerus?
No.
And can Ahasuerus be Koresh? No, it can't be, because of Pasuk in Ezra. Who's the middle one? So therefore, Koresh, Ahasuerus, and Dariabesh. Right? And what's Dariabesh's other name now? Who's Ataxasta? Who's Dariabesh? That's Chazal. Got it? Isn't it charmed? It looks beautiful. Yeah. I've been reading like thousands of different things, but that was Daniel. Yeah, Daniel Perikid Aleph. Then Perikid Aleph, and we read Pasuk Gimel Dalet Hevav. Now go to source one. Yeah, everyone understand what we just did?
Yeah.
That's exactly what Chazal do. Let's read it inside. Seder Olam, you've heard of?
Yeah.
I'll explain what Seder Olam is. There's Tanaim. You've heard of them. Tanaim?
Yeah.
They can write those, they can write Mishnah, they can... They're Tanaim, and they do tons of Midrashim. Boy, they're experts at it. So they're like the earliest... And they're coming to explain Tanakh. They also come to find underlying themes of Tanakh, and they give messages. And Tanaim don't write books and essays and op-eds and blogs. But they have lots of things to tell us. But there's a format to which they give over the drushes. You know what they do? They root them in Psukim. They don't open their mouth without opening with a pasuk. They don't always come to tell you, they're not always coming to tell you pshat in a pasuk, but they won't communicate with you without anchoring themselves in the pasuk. The fancy word for that in Hebrew is midrash. When they teach you Allah, isn't that because that's the way they talk? That's the way they communicate? Is that legitimate? No, it's beautiful. We should be so lucky. Because they're swimming in Psukim, they're living in Torah. And they're the earliest, you know, they're bringing everything to life. They give us the Mishnah as well. It's the most, in Jewish history, it's like one of the greatest time periods of Jewish learning.
They weren't so hung up on learning only Persian.
They applied everything. It was one big package thing. They may not have been sharp, but they were wise. No. No one got that. Okay. Now, look at source number one now. Oh, I'm sorry, we said what Seder Olam is. We're not 100% sure who Seder Olam wrote. That's like, we go to college, you do all that kind of stuff. But it's Miuchat to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta, that's Sam Rabbi Yossi. You know, he was living Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta? Anyone been to Sipari? It's in the Galil. So that was like his yeshiva. He was the head rosh yeshiva there. I'm pushing to come into Rabbi Akiva. He's Rabbi Akiva. Who was a Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and we're before Rebbe. So we're What? Way before Rebbe. We're, yeah.
The door
of the Rebbe. Rebbe Kiva and Rebbe Yossi?
The Kiva was Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi.
Yeah,
and Tommy and Rebbe Yossi and Hanya and Rebbe Yossi.
And Rebbe Yossi. Like a generation. He's around 200. Rebbe Yossi Bachalafte and Rebbe Kiva is 135 or so. Did you tell me as far as an Ashkafa was? You think Yerushalayim and stuff. But now, Tanaim are a lot of, no, Epitana, in the time of Tanaim, they decided, let's make a Jewish history book. Let's make a timeline of Jewish history. Why not? It's such a nice idea, isn't it? And they decided, let's make a, by the way, I know like I'm way over time, but I'm fine, I'm here if everyone wants to stay. Anyone needs to leave, don't be embarrassed. So. Rabbi Yosef ben Chalafta was a Tana. Okay? Now, they went right to one of their compositions is what's called Seder Olam, where the attempt is to figure out the Jewish calendar. Legitimate? What can be the primary source? Tanakh. Up until their time. Up until Tanakh. Yeah, Tanakh. Does Tanakh give us a continuous chronology? No, they don't. Is there any event dated to Briat Olam and Tanakh? Not one. But if I work really hard, can I calculate it?
Yeah.
It's really easy to do it. Am I 100% sure that that's the right calculation? No, but there's room to calculate. What's the most difficult part to calculate is going to be exactly the time period. That's going to be the hardest. I'll give you an example. How do we get to Avraham Avinu? How do you calculate the years to Avraham Avinu?
That
Perikei, Perik Yod, again, that's easy. And everyone knows when Avraham was born?
1948.
Yeah, we've done that. I told you by the line on that one. No? I said that Yashka Minatorah Minayin. Don't anyone understand that?
Yeah.
You know the figure of Estimate Torah Minayin? So why is that Yashka Minatorah Minayin? There's some little hint or something.
Yeah.
1948 is year. But what date is that,
1948?
That's a date to Yashka. You follow? But there's something special. The fact that Avram is born in the year of the Beth Olam, 1948. And the state of Israel was founded in 1948. I call that, it's supposed to be a joke. But, I mean, but if you know those figures, it's like, now, he's born in 1948. How old is Avram when Yitzchak is born? Every Balkari knows that, especially on Rosh Hashanah. So Avram ben Matshana, Vivad Elo, Yitzchak Beno. Okay. How long is it from the birth of Yitzchak until we leave Egypt? Minimum. No, from Lidat Yitzchak. No, minimum. Yeah, minimum. If I have 400 or 430, what's the minimum? Okay. Understand? Yodot Lidat Yitzchak Yazaracha? I'll show you the calculation for you in a second. I want to show you how simple it is. So it's minimum 400 years from birth of Yitzchak till Yitzchak Mitzrayim. From Yitzchak Mitzrayim to being a bad by Rishon, that's a pasuk. 480 and 400, which is 480 altogether. But I said purpose because 80 and 400 might not be 480, especially when Sefer Shoshin everything's 40s. 40s is a, you talk about magic number.
Yeah.
40 is not a magic number, but it says 80 and 400, probably 480. How many years is the first temple for? It doesn't say, but you can calculate really easy, because for the time Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash, we have a year by year, play by play. Every king, next king, there's 19 kings. Add up all their years, and says what year of this king, this one was born. Yom Yom does a great job on that. And how many years, if you add them all up? 428. Well, wait, so don't miss the best. 428. But the first year of every king is also the last year of the previous king. Understand?
Yes.
So when I add up all 19 kings, I get 428. But what I have to subtract? Every transition of king. So therefore I take off 18 and then figure 410. You can calculate it, do it on your own later, 410. What am I up to now? Up to Chorban, I'm set. From the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu to the 2nd of Dayavesh is how many years? Oh, come on. No, from the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu to the 2nd of Dayavesh. That's 70. That's Chariah 70 years. Okay? So I got up to the 2nd of Dayavesh. Is that it? Now, I've been taking the Dayavish. Is Dayavish? Now I'm stuck. Now what do I do? Now I have to go with Sober. That's right. So now I got to use what's called Parshanut. Legitimate? So, If I take Daniel literally, or take, let's pretend he's a Nabi and it will come true, and let's say my son Aleph, that is Alexander the Great, then how many years is Dayavish king for before Alexander comes? Minimum. If Dayavish is Atashtasta, so I know the 70th of Atashtasta is Ezra, makes Aliyah, the 20th of Atashtasta, Nechemiah comes, 32 of Atashtasta, we have another Pasuk, Nechemiah comes back again, and is around for 2 years. So we have 34 years of Atashtasta, who's Dayavish, in Tanakh. Got that?
Mm-hmm.
What happens the next year? Who comes? Alexander, why not? You follow? And therefore, every year is covered. Now, look on the back page. Look on the back page. On source 10. I just did set it all on for you. But that was so simple, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
Wasn't that hard? Look at source number 10. Read it all on the book. Have it? Leilat Abraham, 1948. Have that? Go back to Sukim. How do you tell me time another 400 years of that minimum? What year is it? Just look at your Tachsimanim and make sure I didn't make any mistakes. So they have the same years. Probably in Perikid Bet, when they read it, I'm sure it says 2448 on it. You can check in your Tachsimanim if you're bored. Could be in the Bait Sheni 480, explain where. Chuban Bait Rishon, 410 for Bait Rishon, 410. Tabina Bait Sheni, okay, that's 7 years, okay? Now, till Alexander comes, 34 years. Got that? That's the 34 years from the second of Dayavish till the year after Tanakh's over. Okay. Then, for some reason, they give 6 years to Alexander the Great until Minyan Sherot begins. They give 6 years. I have to explain Minyan Sherot in a minute. I didn't want to do that today, but let's do it quickly. And for some reason, they give 6 years to Alexander the Great. Let me explain why. In the time of Tanaim, what years were written, when you wrote a Ksuba, or a Get, or Star, in the time of the Tanaim, they didn't write minus 200 BCE. Or they didn't write even 100 BCE, did they? How could they? It wasn't around yet. You couldn't write BCE before. What did it count to? In Bait Rishon, they counted to Malachim. What did they do in Bait Sheni? We don't know what maybe they counted in the beginning of Bait Sheni to Malachim for us. What did the Tanaim count to? So Chazal talk about it. It's all good to go about it. Doesn't the star need a date?
Yes.
Everyone's put a star on. They have to have a date. It's possible it's a star. So we know the months and the days. What year do you put on a star?
Year.
Right? What are we going for? Why do we got that going? What do we use? We use the Goyish calendar. What was the Goyish calendar under Greek, under the Greeks, under the Hellenists? But Chazal called me next star on. From the time of the Greek conquest of Alexander the Great, the Greeks decided, especially after Alexander died, the Greeks decided no more messing around. We're going to have a continuous chronology. What we call Minyan Sharot, I think the Seleucid year or something like that. Where did it begin historically? With the Battle of Gaza. I mean, pun not intended. There was a Battle of Gaza way back. It happened to -312. It's a well-known thing. After Alexander the Great died, there was a fight over who's going to succeed. And it broke into three parts. The area of Greece, Macedonia with Antigonus, something like that, the guy has a Jewish name. In Greece, in Syria. So with Seleucid, Seleucus.
Seleucus,
whatever his name was. And in Egypt, with Melech Negev there, we call, that was Tamai. Tamai, first, second, third, they keep the same name also. Tamai is the second name, like Paro. But that's what they, Turgum HaShirim was under Tamai. And Hanukkah began when the Syrian Greeks took over the Egyptian Greeks. That's when all the Hanukkah trouble. That's when the Antiochus with the Seleucids. Now, with the Syrian Greek. Now, what happened? What happened? What happened? I forgot something. We're talking about. I mean, it's Sarot. I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. Now, during, for example, in Sefer Maccabim, verse Sefer Maccabim. -312 BC.
There was a big fight.
There's a big fight, a big battle in Gaza. Yes. Not by chance. It's
from the breakup of the.
When they fight, they decided afterwards that maybe we're going to divide it up. We're going to fight three Medinot for three Amin. They made up, and they divided between Egypt, Syria, and Greece. The three things. From then on, they decided we can't count to this king and that king. It'll be a mess. Hellenists love to be organized. What do you think the Rambam got? There's so much Greek. To this day we think Greek. We think Greek. You saw a Greek. They don't think Chumash is Mesopotamian. It's associative. It's not Greek. The Rambam is, you follow? We're Greeks. The way we think is Greek. Maybe that's of it. Yeah. Now we need to move away from it. We're more associative now. I think our culture is moving back to... associative is more important than organized. Organized is boring. Ask your local anthropologist. It has to be with human development. Now, what happened? They decided, let's have a set counting system. For the Battle of Gaza, that was year one. And when everyone calculated, began Shalot, minus 312 to see. For example, Chazal knew, everyone says, what year was the Beit HaMikdash destroyed? 380. In all the sources, Beit HaMikdash destroyed in the year 380. In the book Josephus, second Beit HaMikdash, 380, the Minyan Sharot. Till 100 years ago in Teman, they were using Minyan Sharot. The Rambam uses Minyan Sharot. The whole Persian Empire, the Greeks gave it to the Romans to the whole Persians. Everything, Persia, Iraq, everything was Minyan Sharot. They don't change it a couple hundred years later. The Christian world changed it. The Sefer Maccabim, the story of Hanukkah happened in the year 148, the Minyan Sharot. In Sefer Maccabim, in Beit Sheni, before the Korban, everyone's using Minyan Sharot because, again, like I said, it's what God gave us going. So we have, someone set standards. They give us a standard for history. Therefore, a star has to be exact. I don't mind using a Goy today. I should use a Goy today. I have to be exact. Now, that was the Jewish date. That was the date that the Jews used all the time. From all the way through, and also to Tanaim, etc. When did that change? What? No, much later. Not till European, when we were living under Christian control, or Christian rule. And the Christians came up, they started their own counting system, and they started counting to their Lord, what they call AD. And really, what's really cool, Yeshua was born in minus four. Yes. You know, they also messed up. Now, they do the calculation with the thing with the calculation when Venus hits Jupiter and there's a big star, it's like really cool. Now, I'm trying to understand what happened. Minyan Sharot is what Chazal were using. Why did I say all that? For some reason, they do this calculation, and they give 34 years to Dariavesh, who's Artaxasta, and then they give 6 years to Alexander the Great, and that's it. And what begins after 6 years of Alexander the Great? Minyan Sharot. And it just so happens, by amazing coincidence, what year is that?
1,000 years after you've
seen it. Look at this, 3448, which just by coincidence happens to be 1,000 years after you set me trying. Not the whole purpose, but one of them. I think it's a byproduct. What did we gain? Minyan Sharot just became a Jewish state. Understand? Because we're not counting to Minyan Sharot. What are we counting to? We're counting to Set Mitzrayim. Just add, like, Hei Tashin Samachet. Add the thousands. The thousands is implicit. It's here 1,000. The Beit HaMikdash was destroyed near 1,380. Not 380. Got it? And therefore, it's very important for Seder Olam that Minyan Sharot should come out to turn into a Jewish state. And that's not my Kiddush. That's many stories come up with that. Seder Olam says it, but it doesn't say that. They didn't say they were playing with the numbers. But that's Seder Olam. Now, in the table on top of it, I put the years, what Seder Olam does. If that's true, if Dariavesh is Artaxasta, and there's only three Persian kings, what happens? Who's Achashverosh? Has to be the middle guy. Look how beautifully this explains all the events of the Gilad Esther. So look on the top table there. Have it? Here you have the 7 years of Bavel on the side. 4th year of Yoyakim, Bavel starts. 11th year of Yoyakim, Bavel Tichonian, got that? Chogam Tikiel. Okay. Hatrat Koresh. Have it, year one? He kings for 3 years. When's the Mishteh? 3 years to Achashverosh. Do a quick calculation. How many years has it been since what? Since Yirmiyahu 70 years, it's really been 76. But I can count Yirmiyahu to a different date. I can count to Galut Yehoyachim. How many years has it been in the third year, if this is the Megillah, in the third year of Achashverosh, how many years has it been since Galut Yehoyachim? And who would not include the Yoyachin? Asher Oglad, Yerushalayim, Nimchola, Asher Gurta, Im? When Yah Melech Bazel. Who went into Galut? That's what the Megillah says? What the Pasuk says? Issue the Ayah B'Shushan Avira, Shmo Mordechai, then? Yair, then Shimi, then Kish, Ishimini, Asher Oglad, Yerushalayim. Yeah. Either it's Mordechai, or his great-grandfather, and that would explain why I'm going to ask four generations. And not five and not three. So who went with Galut?
Either
Mordechai. Now, if it's Mordechai, he's an old man, but he can still be alive in the time of Achashverosh. If Achashverosh is really later, and four generations later, it's perfect again. You follow? And remember, by Rishon, no one in the right mind would name a Jewish kid Mordechai. That's got to be obvious. Remember, Mordechai is a Goyishin, is Marduk. Is a person. Don't be surprised that four generations later, in Babel, we have Christopher's and John's and Peter's in our day school. Okay. Now. So, do you understand what Chazal do now? What was the reason for the Mesiba? It's been 69 years since Galut HaYachin. He's not so good about Achashverosh. And what did he do? Why did he make a party? Okay, because he, you have a problem? The 7 years are over, they can go back. I have some more text there. No. What happens next? The next point happens to 12 years of that. And the Beit HaMikdash is built 3 years later. Ezra comes the next year. See that? Then we have Nehemiah, the old years of Nehemiah, and Alexander comes. And what Chazal says is 52 years under Persian time period. 34 when the Beit HaMikdash is built, and 18 beforehand. That's the Rosh Hashanah in a nutshell. Now, isn't midrashically beautiful, isn't it? Looks like a charm. So it's great. Why not accept it? Now, look on number 11, right next to it. Go down to 115th Street in Manhattan. Columbia University over there. Yeah. You ever see the library? The pillars, it's like, that's Greek. Mm-hmm. And they got a whole list of the Golem. You know the Golem? The list of all the Golem on top there? They got Aristotle up there, and Socrates, and all them. Herodotus. How did he make it up there? What was his yichus? Herodotus. He was the biggest historian. And the Persians and the Greeks, they make Israel-Arab conflicts like nursery school. They were at it. No, everyone knows that. And the Persians, Peloponnesian Wars or something like that? Marathon. Battle of Marathon. Remember that?
Marathon.
And they made a gas station after that. But four? Didn't they? And that was 492, wasn't it? I'm sure you remember. Battle Marathon, that's a big date in all, minus 492. But if you go into the library, and remember, Herodotus, downloads about Judaism, but he wasn't out to get the rabbis. He was a historian. And he records Persian history. Now, he might spin a little bit because he's Persian. What do you want from him? But, because he's Greek. He's Greek. And the Persians are the enemy, but he's still an historian. He's not going to make up 500 years for nothing. And there's other historians, and they corroborate. Josephus has them all. And if I look on the left, there's a list of all the Persian kings, with the Goyishe years in BCE, of who they are. Now, pretend we didn't see anything in Tanakh before, and you have these kings. There's Cyrus the Great, who took over, he reigned earlier, but he took over the Babylonians in 539 or 538. There's a king named Cambyses. Remember, these aren't their Greek names. These are their Greek names. You ever been to Yerushalayim Rehov Lincoln?
Yes.
Why is the street named Lincoln? Who's it named after? Lincoln. But when you take an English name and put it into Hebrew, understand? So if we have Greek names, the Greek name wasn't Dalyavish. You have to know Greek, but it sounds like Dalyavish. It gets a Hebrew twist to it. In English, it's Darius, in Hebrew, it's Dalyavish. In Greek, it's something in between.
What's the second bullet here?
Hasrat Koresh?
Yeah.
Even though Cyrus was king from 550, but the biblical event of the Cyrus declaration was in 539, because that's where he defeats the Babylonians. And then he thanks the gods and lets all of them go back and build the temple. Cambyses is the next king. Then there's Darius the Great, the famous one. Xerxes follows. Artaxerxes, and then Xerxes the Second. Darius the Second, Artaxerxes the Second, Third, Fourth, and finally the last one is Darius the Third, who was killed by Alexander. Got that? Now, the greatest of all them was Darius. Darius was so great, he went to war against the Greeks. And he tried to take over, and he lost in the Battle of Marathon. It was in 492.
This is Darius the First?
Darius the First. Darius the Great, the First. his successor, not his son, his successor, Xerxes.
Wasn't his son?
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure, I'm almost sure it's not his son. He takes over, and he wants to outdo Darius, and he goes to war against the Greeks, and he loses the Battle of Salamis in 479. Battle of Salamis is 479, I think. Whatever it is. It's around... you've heard of the Battle of Salamis, maybe? It was a big ship. That was like this big defeat. But these are all events that they write about. Now, let's take this list. Forget settle on for a minute. Does this fit into Tanakh or not? Who would Cyrus the Great be, who takes over the Babylonians? Does that fit with Tanakh?
Yeah.
Who would that be? That would be Koresh. Then we went from Koresh to Dayavish. And how many years was that? About 18, right? From Masrat Koresh until Dayavish, about 18 years. Who would Dayavish be? Darius. Would that fit? Between Masrat Koresh and Darius? It's perfect. You have 18 years there in between. Who was the king in between? Not Ahasuerus, but Cambyses. Okay. Who takes over for Darius?
But it's only 8 years for
Cambyses.
What? In this chronology, it's only 8 years for Cambyses, not 12 or 13 that we're saying about Ahasuerus, right?
He's not Ahasuerus.
Right. But,
He's definitely not Ahasuerus. He can't be Ahasuerus. Although his name would be Xerxes.
So the 18 years from the first year of Koresh go to the second year of Darius.
Take 539, subtract 18. What do you get? 521, right?
Oh, I see.
It's perfect. It's almost perfect. Tanakh fits with outside history to the T. All the events in Ezra and Nehemiah fit with outside history with Herodotus. Perfect. Better than perfect. Way better than Seder Olam. You don't have to fetch at all. Mm-hmm. There's no fetching necessary. It just fits. Because it's real. Tanakh is true. So why shouldn't it fit? Now, Xerxes who would Xerxes be? What would that say? What name would Xerxes pick to? Remember adding olives to think? Shashrash? Xerxes? Xerxes. And something in remember?
C and R.
No, and we always add the olives. Remember in Aramaic? We always add the olives to different names. Yeah. That's what it's called, yeah. Yeah. So who would Ahasuerus be? Xerxes. Who would Artashasta be? Artaxerxes. It's a perfect fit. Artaxerxes is Artaxerxes. They're the same names. They're just they're tiny differences because of the language differences in pronunciation. So we have a perfect fit with outside history. And there's no contradiction between Tanakh and outside history. It looks perfect. Now, on the other hand, does this was said all along? Doesn't begin. Which proves you what? The Seder Olam is Midrash and not Pshat. Is Midrash legitimate? 100%. Why shouldn't it be? Especially if it has a thematic meaning. Now, but let me show you a couple of thematic things we get. Now, by the way, who are the three Persian kings before Melech Yavan comes? Koresh, Cambyses, Darius. Who loses to Melech Yavan? Darius. Even Daniel works out. In that same Daniel, there will never be another Persian king again. And Daniel is cryptic anyhow. Yirmiyahu is the Bolta, don't come true, and Yirmiyahu explains why. Rekha Debra in Terek Yitzchad, Rekha Debra Mamacha, in Tosh for the Tosh, and that's going to do Shuvah, I'll change my Gzira. The Bolta doesn't come to predict, it comes to shape history. Yeah.
So the problem then is taking Seder Olam not as Midrash.
Taking it literally instead of seriously. Yeah. The problem is when we take it literally instead of seriously. Yeah.
Is this
taking Daniel? The third Persian king is Darius, who's defeated by Melech Yavan in the Battle of Marathon.
But not Alexander.
Not Alexander. Did it say Alexander? That's why I said first year Hogwarts. So that's a Shana Alex form.
Yeah. If you read all the modern commentators,
yeah,
still saying that it's all confused, it's impossible to fit anything with anything. And you've made it sound like...
Makes sense.
What's the problem?
There isn't a problem. So I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is we didn't have all the outside sources. Seder Olam is a masterpiece, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Seder Olam is a masterpiece. Now, I think when they wrote Seder Olam, they knew it was a drush. Because Josephus has all the Persian years. He doesn't say like Seder Olam. And Josephus is in the time of the Tanaim. And he's from. He's left it, but he's from. Isn't he? He went to the other side, but he was a coin. He knows the Mishnah. He knows his voice in his story. Why would he make up here? There's nothing to gain. Now, I think the time knew this is straight. This is midrashic. And let me try to explain why. In the time of the Mamorim already, and later in the time of the Rishonim, they don't have to see the Tzedek any outside source, and they take Tzedek along. Why should they take it literally if it's so nice? And therefore it becomes accepted Jewish history, like, as though it happened. And just like washing, cutting out the cherry tree. It becomes accepted Jewish history. Why shouldn't it be? Our Jewish year is built on Tzedek Olam. So our Jewish year assumes the Second Temple is 420 years, based on the Cheshbon, based on crunching all the years. What's the real year? You have to add about 160 to get to the, which is really close to 6,000. That would be really neat if like all these big things were happening.
When
does Ezra come then? What? Ezra returns that comes in the seventh year of Atakshasta. Much longer, yeah. You know this by heart. That everyone who says 410, 420, like Sederon says, like the Gemara quotes all the time, if you ask him what year was the first Beit HaMikdash destroyed in Goyish years, what do they say? 586, like it's written. Right? And what year is the second Beit HaMikdash destroyed? 70. If it's first, it's destroyed in 586, when is the second one built? 516. How long is it from 516 to plus 70? That's 585 years. Everyone by heart knows it's 585. All the history books at 585. Everyone knows 332 BC. It's W doing all history.
But the Gemara says 420?
Because it's quoting Sedar Olam. Because it's Tanayim. And because in Jewish history, in Tanayim Jewish history, they didn't write it for the 18th and 19th and 20th centuries. We have a different piece of history. Yeah. Their history is prophetic. Why? The same thing the article does today. What's wrong with making Dolim into saints when you're living in a Christian society? What's so terrible about that? If it's good for education of our children, if they're going to have saints, we can have saints, and we can pat ourselves in the back all day. There's nothing. It's part of, you can change history for educational reasons. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying it's understandable, especially if it has a prophetic message. We do it today. Why can't they do it way back then? Now, what's the message? Now this is still too Zionistic.
Yeah.
If this is the right year, when is the Megillah happening? If Achashverosh is Xerxes, yes? When is the story of the Megillah happening? In real history? Yeah. And after Dayavish, and in Jewish history, when is it happening? In Tanakh, when is it happening? In the book of Ezra, where would I have to fit it in? Between Dayavish and Atashasta. When you went to school, you all learned between Koresh, it's between, before the Beit HaMikdash was built. If I look at history, the story of the Megillah is happening after the Beit HaMikdash was built. It's after Dayavish, it's after Chagai Tzchariah, it's after Tzchariah says, "Only v'tim chibatim chibav v'shachanti b'tzofech," it's after Chagai says, "Malachan Hashem v'atechem tzfunim, come and build," it's after Koresh, it's after the Persian Empire is allowing the Jews to build, and the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt in Yerushalayim, redemption's beginning, God brought his people back. God asked his, Amitro is like the wife. Isn't there like, Amitro is like God's wife, you know, in the Vim? Remember Hosea? God calls upon his wife to show off his glory to all the nations, doesn't he? Okay. And what does his wife decide to do? She doesn't want to come. To show off her glory, to make her husband look good. What the king decide to do? It's not worthy to keep them. Remember, who's the man? Remember, Chazal alludes to this all the time. Who's the male? What's their sin? They don't care about the Beit HaMikdash. How did Chazal do that? The Kelim, Shonim. What do they say? They drink from the Kelim Beit HaMikdash. That's a misdemeanor. Right? Literally, it's a misdemeanor. Take it thematically, it's Jewish. It's a theme of the Bible. But we've chosen to make a name for God. God put us into rehab. Rehab's over. It's time to come back and get to work. What do we want to do? We're staying behind. The Megillah doesn't have to explain how only how God saved us. They have to explain why we're almost destroyed. What's Hester Panim in Tanakh? Hester Panim isn't God's not watching us. God's punishing us, it says Tefanim. Read it, Zinu, in Vayach beforehand. God's saying, what am I going to do? You're going to abandon me. You're going to abandon me. You're going to break my brief. You're not going to be a loyal covenantal partner. I'm going to masturb my panim and let you be punished. Hesed panim means I'm going to punish you and not help you out. You're going to call to me and I'm not going to be there for you. But Bani, again, what's it say? God says, Kefet Sorbef Hesed Sorbef, God will come and save us at the last minute.
You're making Esther's name an intentional pun.
For sure. That's why it's a Tanakh. And so is Mordechai's name. Mm-hmm. Mordechai's mother. What? What?
Mordechai is a Goyish of Arazara.
Yeah.
Esther is not a Shaka, from the way you're saying it.
It's Esther, Esther Minatomi 9. Esther Minatomi 9. On the Chiaster, Sifan Amikim. Chazal said, who's the Melech? Yesu Anachad, Mufuzah Fadamin, that Tatea Melech Idam Shomin. Who's the Melech? What is Tatea Melech? Is the Melech HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is it Amitra not listening to God? Or the Jews are listening to Achashverosh? Why do we make such a big deal about HaMelech in the Megillah? But what do we do with the Maestra? What do we celebrate Shushan Purim? Because I'm moving to Yerushalayim. They do everything. How did Shulchan Aruch get into all that? In Chazal's interpretation, they take it thematically, not literally. If you understand these Midrashim are written thematically, then it's the biggest shock ever, the book. Because something happened, the Jews are about to be destroyed, the names are changed to indict the guilty. But it's much more powerful. Satire is a tool like that. In fact, when did the great Greek satirists speak? Satire as a form of literature is exactly the time period. It's the 400-500 BC. If it's perfect. Mm-hmm. They take Greek names and Sanhedrin stuff. Why can't they take Greek style? There's nothing. It's Ksuvim. It's legit. You follow? And therefore, don't read it like. Does it read like a history book? The Mishnah doesn't read like a history book. It reads like a history book for a 5-year-old. You follow? Everything's like, it looks like a story. It reads like a storybook. Mm-hmm. But I'm giving the prophetic background to understand the Megillah, and. I think more than that. Why in the book of Ezra, if you know the time period of Ezra and Nehemiah, remember Haggai, the big complaint, you don't care about the Beit HaMikdash. That's the Nevi'im's complaint. When we rewrite the history of Beit Sheni in the time of Ezra, what do we record? In the book of Divrei Hayamim, which is the introduction to, Divrei Hayamim is written by Sheni as well. The last line of Divrei Hayamim is the first line of the book of Ezra. It's one long book. Divrei Hayamim focuses on all the efforts that David did to build the Beit HaMikdash. They were supposed to learn from David about how to care about the Mikdash and build up Yerushalayim. What does the book of Ezra talk about? It's not a continuous history. It's all the efforts done in the beginning by Cheney to build the house. What does it talk about? Aliyat Koresh, the Bnei Koresh, and the first attempt. And then what caused it to stop. The next big detail is the second year of Dayavish, and how they built again. The only thing it talks about are all the attempts to rebuild Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. After the Beit HaMikdash is built in the 6th year of Dayavish, it's a dud. Nothing happened. How does Ezra tell you that? Exactly. It skips it. And we jump from the 6th year of Dayavish to 7th year of Atashavta. Kamad Delei Sadami. You know what that means? Kamad Delei Sadami. How do you say that in English? If you want to punish your child, what do? Ignore him. It's much more powerful than yelling at him. And he'll get the message much faster. You tell him he's wrong, he'll be convinced he's right. Don't tell him anything, he'll start asking himself, what did I do wrong? It's a different style, but what the book of Ezra does, it goes from the 7th year of Atashasta, Aliyat Ezra, what he does, and skips the 20 of us of Salat Nechemiah. It only talks about efforts made by our leaders to rebuild Yerushalayim and the Mikdash. That's the topic of the book. It's not chronicle. It's prophetic. It's not prophecy, it's prophetic. Because it's written to give you a prophetic message. The message of the prophets in the beginning by Shani is God wants you back, and you're not coming back. And that's the underlying message in Megillat Esther that you can learn from. Megillat Esther wasn't written to tell you this history. It tells you to see the hand of God in history, not just how God saves us, also how he can punish us and what he expects from us. Yeah?
You think that it was about 50 years after the beginning of
life? Yeah. Which makes sense. Because when he comes, what do you find? Total third generation assimilation. Read the book. And the cast is third generation return. And that's why we have all the genealogies in the beginning of Ezra, because who's a Jew is a big question.
So instead of all of trying to avoid all that, why instead of ignore that whole time, that whole aspect, and squeeze out?
Because Ezra did. If Ezra ignored it, Siddhartha ignored it. If Ezra ignored it, Siddhartha ignored it. And maybe intentionally ignored it. I think he knew it existed, but he purposely... So, but if you know the outside history and reach that Olam in that time period, you catch on right away what he's up to. The Nebuah ignored it, we ignored it, it didn't happen.
The whole story of happened during that period.
It happened, yeah, but not the way it's told. The Jews were almost destroyed. In fact, if you count up, you know the letters they send out, it's so cool? The first letters send out, Lashmi La Rog Labed, on the 13th of Nisan. Of Nisan. Yeah? And then 3 days later, Haman gone. He hung. And remember, they go to the king right away, Baban Sevas? No. Yeah, Baratim Yisud Chuvim. When did the second letter go out?
Sivan.
In Sivan, yeah. Sunday in Sivan. I think that's it. What? 23rd of Sivan. Guess how many days is that? Between the 13th and the 23rd of Sivan, 13th of Nisan, you can figure out, you can guess. 70 days. 70. Remember Yom Hashanah? And there's only 2 dates. No. What do we need to know the dates for? The seventh, and Achash, the way they describe Achashverosh is that his Armon is right to Beit HaMikdash. His Armon, Chatzer Pnimi, Chatzer Tzitzona, Chatzer, his, what else does he have there? He has, not to mention the Kilim, no, the whole story.
You've got to mention the Bira business.
The word Bira in Divrei Yamin is only there, and it's the word for the name for the Beit HaMikdash. And all of a sudden, the Shushan is the Bira. We need Dava, Ish Yudi. I'll call that Zecharia. Ish Yudi is the theme in Zecharia. Yeah? If you see that prophetic backing, it's such a good book for me. It's so, that's shark. It hits so hard. And it carries a great message also. Again, that's a whole long story, but Dibei Shalom Bemet. I can show you in Zecharia, we're way over time. But we're in Zecharia. when you study Zecharia, there's so many things in Zecharia that you see laced through the Megillah. Now, if you think Zecharia is before Megillah, then you'll never catch them. Right. But when you realize that the Megillah is after Zecharia, they're staring at you. Yeah. Now, again, my assumption is the authors of Megillah Esther, or definitely Antek Nesed Hagola, are assuming the reader knows Zecharia, and knows the road history, and knows what should have been happening, and writing it, instead of writing, you should have made Aliyah, you should have answered God's call, and be ready to end. He writes it in a satirical way. Remember what a Chazal say, that the Tabat of Haman was more powerful than 48 Nevin. Remember? Remember Chazal say that in the Sechem Megillah? That Gula Tabat of Haman from 48 Nevin. Why? Because 48 Nevin tried all they could, and no one did Tshuva. Haman takes off his Tabat, all of a sudden, the same feeling. They're returning to God to make a fast day, and all of a sudden they care. That's that, you follow? The thing, sometimes, the thing, Nebuah's given up on a direct Muslim. Direct Muslim doesn't work. That's getting better. You learn a satirical word, that's the word. It's much more powerful. Did it work? That's another question. But it's something, you understand why Purim is never batel? That's an increase out of it. Again, there's tons of things in the Megillah. That's the question. When you read the Megillah, is that in the back of your head or not? Or you read the Megillah like, it's just a little history book, here's what happened. And God says this, remember, they want to kill us, we want to eat in the sea. It's one of those holidays again. Or is there something much deeper? Is it for an art school history series, or is it for Tanakh? Is it simplistic, or is it deep? So that's the... Now, if you want, I'll just show you the sources I gave you, you go through. I have all the sources we said all along. You can go through it later on your own. And number one, he quotes the passage from Daniel. He says, Shosham Malachim Amdim Leporah, who are the three? Korash, Achashverosh, and Dayanash. Shabbat Advice, Matam Lomaharvi, Yashok Gadol, Revi Lamadash. All your questions you put in. Rabbi Yossi that he quotes the Bnei about Shvayim Shivim. That way it works out. You know, Sefer Jubilee is the same problem. I think it's going to be perfect numbers. Shvayim Shivim is 420 and 7 is comes out to 490. Which would I say, that's not our topic. No, I shouldn't say anything. It comes out that by Shani is 420. By Risha is 410. 420, I'm sorry. Right, 420 and 70. The 70 years of thing, and the 70 years and 420 is 490 altogether. And 49, isn't 49 something special? What's 7 times 7? Yeah, Shvayim Shivim. About the Gula. So from the beginning of Beit Sheni to the, from the first Korban, the second Korban, the Shvayim Shivim. It's a drasha and what Daniel's talking about. Remember Daniel's talking about what's going to happen in the future. In Perek Chafet, they do the 3 years of, the third year of Koresh. He says, so Koresh was king partially 3 years. And then Ahasuerus, they wrote the Sitnav, what we called it. And they started the Bitu of Avodah Beit HaMikdash into the second Izzah Yavesh. The third year of his reign, Asa Mishteh, and then those 4 years, Esther was hiding. And therefore, she only married in the 7 years, they finally find her. And then they do that, what happened, you know, with the, there's all stories in the Megillah there. And then, and they quote some Yerbiyah later on about why that, when the 7 years are over. And then in six, for the other one. He goes through all the calculations of the 52, on the top of the next page. So 52 years after Churban HaBayit until Asarat Koresh. It was 70 minus 18, 52. 3 years of Koresh, 14 Achashverosh, 2 of Daryavis, that's the 70 years when the house was built. And then he quotes the Pasuk in Tzcharia. See how we figure Tzcharia 70 years? 52 from Churban HaBayit until Asarat Koresh. 3 of Daryavis, 14 Achashverosh, 2 of Daryavis, that's the 70 years of Tzcharia. Yeah, that was the beginning of this year. And then about then 4 years it was built to make the Mikdash, you know, until the 6th year of Dayavish. And then 7. Votos manashana ba lezra mi bavel. Achad var me'el bachut ha-tashasta al lezra. Tashasta ha-tashasta. He says, who is Dayavish? Who is ha-tashasta? It's the next year. And then the Chemi comes in year 20. He turns in year 32. And I guess it's the 52 years of Persian rule before Alexander. And then Ad Kani Unavim Mitnavim the Kiruach HaKodesh. From here on, follow Dibei Chachamim. Then he has the 420 years of Beit Sheni, the 34, 180 of Yavan, 103 and 103. And then we saw then they follow Minat Shtolot. And then the Kiruach has 11 years from Yitzhak Mitzvah, the 484, 1052, no, it's then he goes to brings the Grub to Rosh about 1,000 years. From Yitzhak Mitzvah, it's 11 years till it's 1,000 years to the bottom left. The Grub to Rosh, Yitzhak Mitzvah, the Yitzhak Mitzvah is here 1,000 before Minat Shtolot. 34, 180, 103, 103, 410. That's it, Beit Sheni is 420. That's the 420 Beit Sheni. 34, 180, 103, 103. And then the 1,000 years is 40 by Rishon. I mean, from the time they build it, so them. And 410 of by Rishon. 52, 52, and 6, they get 1,000. That's Seder Olam in a nutshell. Okay, that was a lot. I told you guys to drink a lot of coffee today. I know I overdid it, but if I told you someone would have come if I told you it'd be short. But now this is one last word of I call film clear. What I tried to explain, I think it's important, because when you go to college, and all the Jewish history books have, you know, the classic 420. And the Gemara quotes it all the time. And in rabbinic literature from the time of Amoraim, they take it literally. I'm trying to explain, it's understandable why they did it. It fits so nicely, especially when no one takes Ezra Nechemi that seriously anyhow. They don't read it carefully. What was originally written, was it written literally, or did they take it seriously? You can argue. Did they really know it, or did they make a mistake? You can argue that. I can't accept they were making mistakes. I think they did it intentionally, and they were writing it seriously, not literally, with all the meanings I'm trying to give. But that's my, no, this is my own opinion. But I understand why in the time of Amoraim, everyone, why wouldn't you accept it? It fits so perfect. It explains everything. It's Sibalam Siba. It explains Achashverosh. Esther, the whole thing. And what's the other possibility? Have question marks in Jewish history? We don't know what happened with... You can't write history like that, especially for kids. You want a complete history. It answers the bill. And it becomes accepted. Time of the reshoring, everyone accepts it like it happened that way. So there's a danger in saying, oh, it looks like all the rabbis made a mistake. But it's the same way when you remember the Gemara about medicine. and about science. What do you want? They're chachamim. They're not God. And they're allowed to explain. Now Baruch Hashem we have outside sources, and just like we appreciate Parshat Mishpatim better, now that we know Hammurabi, and we can give a better understanding of what God's up to in Parshat Mishpatim, we can understand God's answer so much better now because we have outside sources. And we get the message better from it. What one last thing. What you gain from it, kids go to college, brought up with Chazal, and then Munaf Chachamim, and they see in history what happens. They go to college, they say, yeah, the rabbis are wrong. And they're off in their history, maybe they're off in halakha, and then off comes, everyone knows. It's not even a slippery slope, it's just a slope. Okay? And you lose them so fast. If you can explain, I'm not doing anything apologetically, I'm saying educationally. One approach is, instantly. Now don't let him see this, because this is dangerous. The other approach is inoculate. Meaning, explain what the problem is, but give them the kidding, understand why it's okay that there could be discrepancy. It doesn't mean the rabbis are wrong and everything. It means just like they can follow the medical opinions of the time, they follow the history of the time, it will make sense kodor as they saw it. But at least I have to clean out to understand why there's a discrepancy between the years that we have and the years that they have. Yeah. I don't want to say that, but I'm saying what the question is. So look at the Rambam in the Hakdama to Mishnah Torah. Or to Mishnah Torah, yeah. He talks about the Mishnah we have of Chachamim. You know, from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yeshua. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. And he talks about from Yirmiyahu, gave it to Baruch Ben Neriah. Baruch Ben Neriah, right, to Ezra. And Ezra, by a second, to Shimon HaTzadik. And from there, down to
the same
Yeah, yeah. So, now, what's the big blur? I'm saying Chesed Abdullah. What's the Mishnah say? Right? So Ezra gave it to Ashek Zeh Saragdolah. Ezra got it from, we have Haggai and Kariah to come out, I'm sorry. You have Yirmiyahu to Baruch, to Haggai and Kariah, to Ezra, that can fit. That works there. But Ezra gave it to Ashek Zeh Saragdolah. We go from Ashek Zeh Saragdolah to Shimon HaTzadik. Now, is Ashek Zeh Saragdolah one generation, or eight generations, or five, six generations? As long as Ashek Zeh Saragdolah, the mission works fine. The problem is interpretation of the mission is problematic. Because Rambam took Seder Olam literally. There's nothing wrong with that. Why shouldn't he?
But I'm asking you, are you saying that the expansion,
yeah,
several doors, is that the same answer you're giving in Tosh Malta as this is the Tosh Malta?
That's the same. That's exactly what I say. Because Seder Olam, it doesn't say it's only one generation. I say Seder Olam, as I said, it can be 100 years. Remember, Ezra covers, we're halfway through it, like Ezra Nehemiah. And historically, we have, again, that whole time period is a black hole in Jewish history. We know very little about it, in archaeology also. And it could be the outside history as well. I'm not saying the outside history is 100% right. That may be up by 5-10 years also.
It's also just been very discomforting to me that that's exactly the time that the Jewish critics say that it was written in Mala.
I mean, the actual Bible.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what, yeah, that's, but that's definitely where it becomes, but Judaism transformed, in this black hole of Jewish history, is where we become Jewish. Is where rabbinic Judaism really takes root.
That was created.
Okay. You should be on tape.
Okay.
But again, I think you can deal with it because I think the stuff, things that does make sense. You know, if it fits in, then that's definitely when Jewish learning begins to flourish. And powerful, then becomes
easier time accepting
the first of the. Yeah. Okay, but that's a different. That's a bigger topic. That you need a story. That you need a. No, so I can take you up till 32 years of a tachasta. 34. From there on, you have to bring college professor. Yes, sir. Anyway, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Yeah. We have to bend. I think we've had 72 minutes of session. But yeah.